week 119 of Bratta's Branded Thoughts, and I'm joined by Alex Bratta, by our regular guests on the show, Noah and Micaiah Kruko, and we're here. We were just with everybody about 2 weeks ago. We recorded another podcast kind of updating everybody on the situation with the coronavirus and, of course, the ongoing issues socially and in the community had not really come up yet. And a lot has happened in the last 2 weeks. I'm sure everybody on the panel would agree with that, not only in sports, but just in the world in general. But right before we jumped on here and started recording, guys, we kind of got a flashback to 2013. And who can forget the tremendous play of former Hawkeye Amari Spivey? And the reason we kind of flashed back and looked back to his draft day is we have the privilege of hearing from Amari this evening on our podcast. A guy that started for the Detroit Lions for several years, very successful corner, a guy that left Iowa early, and a guy that Norm Parker, Iowa's previous defensive coordinator, who has since passed on, had stated that he thought Amari had a chance to be maybe the best corner in the history of that coaching staff at Iowa. And that says something, of course, from a seasoned defensive coordinator like Norm Parker. So we'll hear from Amari here in just a few minutes. We won't keep everybody waiting on that interview. But before we get to that, I think everybody here knows why we're on. A lot has transpired in the last 2 weeks, and it has begun to eat its way into sports, especially for Hawkeye fans. Alex, explain these last 48 hours and some of the things. I don't want to get into specifics. We'll talk some specifics here in a little bit. But explain what these last 48 hours have been like for Hawkeye fans. I think we lost Alex already. We're 2 minutes into the show when we already lost. let's throw it over to Noah. We'll see if we can get Alex's glitches figured out here. But Noah, have we had a tougher 48 hours as Hawk fans that you can remember?
In my experience, somewhat closely following the Hawkeye football program, I can't really think of anything. I mean, there are tough losses, but those just happen. But what's been going on has been very serious. It has apparently affected a lot of different people.
Micaiah, again, we don't want to jump to – that's the last thing we want to do, and that's what we want to tell everybody as we're recording the show. We're not here to jump to conclusions. We're not here to make broad statements about what needs to happen, who's at fault, what stories are true, what stories aren't true. But, Micaiah, this is a problem. And of course, we're talking about the claims of racial bias, whether they be conscious or subconscious, racial bias inside the Iowa football program. This is a problem that, of course, it is sweeping the country, sweeping the world right now. It's obviously being something that is on everybody's minds, and rightfully so. We do see, unfortunately, police brutality. We see these different things. We're not here to talk about those social issues. They're obviously issues. But did you ever think, Micaiah, that this would come to what it's come to, that it would begin to be an issue so close to home?
Maybe not this close. It's a little unsettling to see it, you know, in your own backyard, so to speak. It's just the kind of thing that you always acknowledge exists and happens, but for the most part, kind of downplay it, at least in most cases. Now, there have been some outstanding circumstances, and this is not the first time that this has happened, but there have been some times where you have to just, you know, nod your head and say, you know, this is an issue. And I think this is one of those times.
Can we all agree this is not just an Iowa problem? This is not a University of Iowa problem. We know that this stretches far, much further than Iowa, and Iowa happens to be, appears to be, will be a driving force for many athletes that will probably come forward and talk about experiences that they felt to be inappropriate or unjust. But Alex, I think we've got your glitches figured out on your end. What were your initial thoughts when some of this news broke? And of course, we've continued to get more and more as the weekend has gone on. We'll recap some of that in just a moment. But what were your initial thoughts when the initial news broke?
I mean, it was a bit surprising just because, you know, it was University of Iowa, and we don't typically hear a lot as far as the staff on the football team or any of the sports teams. It seems like Iowa, U of I usually is a pretty tight ship. And so it was a bit surprising, but on the other hand, it seems like there's a lot of that happens that gets swept under the rug and only tends to come to light when there's bigger issues going on and people feel comfortable coming out about it. So it was kind of a mix for me.
So let's kind of recap some of this, and we're going to get to we're going to have Amari jump on here, get some thoughts from him here in a moment. But let's kind of recap what has actually happened in the past 48 hours. And it started with a guy that's become pretty prominent in the NFL, James Daniels, a guy that's starting for the Chicago Bears. And I think all of us here would probably attest to the fact that he's a guy, and his brother, LaShawn Daniels, both of those guys were highly respected in the Iowa program. Would we all agree with that? Coaches to really, I mean, James Daniels is a guy who started at tackle as a freshman because of injuries. And you don't see that at Iowa. All right. So that tells you that this coaching staff thought a lot of his character, thought a lot of his ability and his maturity. He came out over the weekend on Friday night after a post, I believe it was Scott Docterman of the Gazette, that had basically talked about, we know the Colin Kaepernick movement with people kneeling during the national anthem and all this stuff. And of course, a lot of that has to do with the police brutality and that controversy. But he came out and made a statement, James Daniels did. And I'll just read some of these quotes and we'll kind of get everybody's reaction to this. So James Daniels came out on Friday night, and in regards to the kneeling, this is what he had to say. These are all via Twitter, by the way. If the team collectively decides to kneel, speaking of Iowa, this will bring about a cultural change for both Iowa football and the state of Iowa, which I believe is long overdue. This, of course, created a firestorm. Mike Daniels, former Pro Bowler for the Packers. I believe he's with the Lions now. Am I mistaken on that, guys?
I don't remember.
I think he's with Detroit. He said, and I quote, "The conversation picked up from there throughout the last few days." Let's see, I lost it here. Excuse me. I misread that. This is what Mike Daniels had to say. You know, they don't want to have that conversation. Directing that towards the university. Jaleel Johnson, current Minnesota Viking. Very long overdue. It's time for change in that community. Former offensive lineman for Iowa, Raphael Eubanks. Courageous. I forever will be proud to be a Hawkeye, and even more today because of your action. The same culture that breeds success does so at a cost to so many of its players without acknowledgement or acceptance. As you say later, 7-5 instead of Big Ten championships. And that is just the beginning. Colin Sandeman, former wide receiver during the Ricky Stanzi days, all he had to say in response to James Daniels' tweet was, all capital letters, do it. Aaron Menz, a linebacker who had an injury-plagued career at Iowa, but a guy that I think the coaching staff thought highly of, talked about his experience with Iowa City Police and being falsely accused of something or assumed maybe that they were involved with some illegal activity. And when the cops found out Jaleel Johnson was involved with this, and again, I'm not going to quote him because he did use some vulgarities here, but basically he said the cops told them after finding out they were on the football team, said, if I knew you guys were Hawkeyes, we wouldn't have done this. Of course, that didn't make Jaleel Johnson or these players feel very happy, and rightfully so. Faith Akakadi says, Coach Ferentz is one of the reasons I committed to Iowa as a high school senior. He cares and he gets it. However, for this program in particular, real change begins with Coach Doyle and his strength and conditioning staff. Another anonymous Iowa player says that strength and conditioning coach Coach Doyle asked me if I did gangbanging in the off season because I ain't running track or wrestling. Jaleel Johnson says the dude asked me, actually I think he had a misprint here, dude told me I couldn't afford golf clubs. James Daniels went on to say there are too many racial disparities in the Iowa football program. Black players have been treated unfairly for far too long. Another anonymous player says, and I quote, I remember when I used to wear my tank tops in the facility, I used to get called in the coach's office because I had too many tattoos and it wasn't the Iowa culture or the Iowa way, starting with Coach Doyle. Former Iowa Hawkeye offensive lineman Adam Geddes, he also played for the New York Giants, had three emojis in response to James Daniels' tweets, and those were three clapping hands. LeBron Daniel, former defensive lineman at Iowa back in the late 2000s, said, as Mike Daniels said yesterday, they don't want to have that conversation. Tavon Smith, we remember him famously from the Gus Johnson call in the 2015 championship games, Beathard to Smith on the 85-yard bomb. He says, and I quote, a lot of my brothers dealt with issues, and I'm glad someone is speaking on it now. Let's pick up a few more of these. Again, we can go all day with some of these because there have been so many. DJ Johnson, I'm not going to read all of these. DJ Johnson's a kid that we learned just transferred. In fact, we learned that shortly after our last podcast, as you guys will recall, and he's really come out strong against this coaching staff. Again, we had more from Aaron Menz as well. Reggie Spearman, former Iowa linebacker that transferred out, says, I personally believe Doyle and Kirk, from my own experiences, aren't inclusive and understanding of young black athletes. Now, here's a guy, Jordan Lomax, who says, and this is a guy that's very well respected. I believe he was a team captain for at least a year or two under Kirk. He says, I have much respect for KF, Kirk Ferentz, and other coaches on the staff as men of great integrity, principles, and morals, and I am confident they have the ability to be part of the solution. As my brother Faith Akakadi already mentioned, change starts in the weight room. Torrin Young, we remember the story, guys, he left. Nobody really knew why he left this year. He was leaving the football team, was not transferring, and didn't really have a chance at the NFL, at least right now. He says, and I quote, if you are a black player, you quickly learn to conform to white culture at Iowa. And if you don't, you won't make it very long. Darian Cooper, former defensive lineman, remember when they kicked you out of workouts, speaking to another player, because only half your hair was braided. Jaleel Johnson, possibly joking a little bit here, he says, I got kicked out of workouts because my shoes weren't tied properly. I don't know how serious he was. Manny Rugamba, we know he's a guy that transferred out of the program and ended up, I believe, at Miami of Ohio. And again, we don't have time to read all of this, but we do want to share a couple of these. And again, there's some vulgarities that we're not going to repeat over the air here, but he gave an experience about how he was lifting in the weight room one day, and one of the lifts that they had to do was an open and close your hands in a bowl of rice. While walking to the bowl of rice, one of my teammates and close friends just left the rice station and was on the bench rack. After benching, there was some rice left on the bar. Coach Doyle then says, blankety blank, what is this? Clean this blankety blank up. Players walk over to clean it up, walks away from Doyle. Doyle then says, why are you walking with all that swagger? I'll put you back on the streets. The kid comes from a happy home with both parents. A Separate incident occurred before one of our team lifts. He asked the same player where he was the night before. The girl said he was at his girl's house. Coach Doyle then pulls his pants halfway down to sag off his butt, turns his hat backwards, puts one hand on his pants, and starts to strut while mocking the player, saying, "I was at my girl's house." And he finished up this tweet by saying, "As a player who transferred from Iowa, I hope this does not come off as spiteful. Iowa gave me memories, friends, and opportunities that I only dreamed of and am forever grateful for my time there. I wish nothing but well for all Hawkeyes present and past, and that is why I spoke up. For the future players that get the same great opportunity that I had." And we could go on and on with this, and maybe we'll share a few more of these as we continue. But, Alex, I don't know how many of these you got to read beforehand, but just listening to some of these complaints, it seems like a pretty steady, I should say maybe a general theme with all of these tweets. There needs to be there's obviously some problems. There's some issues. Now, whether they're exclusively racial, if they're exclusively racial-based issues or not, I guess we can talk about that, and that's something that will have to be talked about within the program. But what are your takeaways from some of these statements, from this snowball effect of players that have come forward these last couple of days?
Well, it seems like with a lot of these types of incidents, it seems like people, let's say Chris Doyle in this case, maybe allude to something that's seems racist in intent without actually coming out and saying anything obvious. Maybe they think that keeps them safe. I'm not sure what the mentality is there, but especially when you're there in person, you know, and somebody says something to you, you can pick up on their intention right away. And if it was just one player that said that, you think, well, maybe he misread what Doyle meant. But like you said, it's a pretty steady stream of players with similar experiences. So it seems pretty overwhelmingly obvious that there's something wrong. Like you said, there's some kind of a problem there.
Amani Hooker, a guy that we obviously respect, and I think the coaching staff respected him. He was the guy that got the cash defensive set really in place at Iowa. He says that when he walked into the facility, he remembers it would be difficult for black players to walk around the facility and be themselves, as if the way you grew up was the wrong way or wasn't acceptable, and that you would be judged by that and it wouldn't impact playing time. And we'll hear from Amari Spavey here in just a moment. He talked on that. We talked to him just briefly on the show, but we're gonna hear somewhat he had to say on the same subject. And again, you'll see that common thread continue. Trying to look for some other notable quotes here. Noah, do you have anything to throw into this as we continue to scroll through all these different examples of injustice, nonetheless, whether they're racially based or not?
Well, it's the kind of thing that you definitely don't want to see. And we can't say for sure because none of us were there. We don't know for sure whether this happened. But it's getting to the point where so many different people are telling very similar stories. And it's getting hard to say that at least some of the stuff didn't happen.
Yeah. When you have this many guys coming out from different classes, different years, different teams. Yeah, I mean, you know they're not all lying. Akram Wadley talked about how he was asked by Brian Ferentz twice. He was asked by Brian Ferentz twice if he was going to rob a liquor store because he had a mask on. And these were masks that were provided by the university because it was cold out. Again, was it a racial slur? Racial slur? Not necessarily, but as Alex, you mentioned, I think the common theme here is insensitivity, extreme disrespect, rudeness, insensitivity. I as a white male, I can't sit here and say, well, these things were racist or weren't racist. I don't think any of us can say that. I thought one of the more interesting quotes from the weekend was from Kevin Ward. And if you don't remember Kevin Ward, it's because he really didn't play a whole lot besides on special teams. A white male, his perspective from inside the program. And I thought this was interesting. We won't read the whole thing, but notice what Kevin Ward had to say. He was talking about how respected Jordan Lomax is within that program. What he had to say, let's see here. He does say here, I think it's important to know that this is an issue Kirk Ferentz has been aware of and trying to solve since before I left. 2017, we had a team meeting where Kirk Ferentz said very bluntly how the staff noticed that there was a racial disparity in regards to attrition, and that the past few years had been worse than ever. My senior class had only 2 black players out of 17, where we began with roughly equal numbers. He brought back Lomax to speak to the black players privately that day and began meeting with individuals on the team to help actively find a solution to the problem. He says, I feel compelled to say this because I have such unwavering love and respect for Coach Ferentz. I want people to know he has been proactive about this since long before the recent events that it began to relight the fire of racial injustice in our country. Kirk Ferentz truly cares about his players and wants all of them to be successful in life, school, and football. So that was a, and again, it's coming from a white player, you know, that he's giving his perspective on it, but it was at least comforting to know, and maybe I'm naive in saying this, but it was comforting to know that this is an issue that maybe is in the process of being addressed. Certainly it's going to be addressed more now than ever. But I don't know. None of us can really say we know Kirk Ferentz, because we don't, but he's been the coach here for 22 years. Can't do any of you think that Kirk Ferentz is a racist?
Well, it seems to me like you're talking about the difference between insensitivity versus actual racist intent. It seems to me like because the only one I heard about Brian Ferentz was that one that maybe with one instance, I think it was Akron Wadley, I'm not sure, but
I was just going to say, before you go on, there's Jaleel Johnson's quote. Coach Doyle is the problem in that building, and so is Brian Ferentz. Things won't progress until those two fix themselves. They know they're a problem. Kirk Ferentz isn't. I respect Coach Ferentz wholeheartedly. It's the others in the building.
Okay. Yeah, I hadn't really, you know, I haven't read through all those aside from what you're reading now, but yeah, that's interesting. It seems like there's definitely a pile of incidences with Chris Doyle, but yeah, I hadn't heard that about Brian Ferentz, other than just that one that you had mentioned before. So
James Daniels said the same thing. I wouldn't be in the league without Coach Doyle and Brian Ferentz, but Jaleel is right. Change needs to start with those two. We knew there have been some issues. We were aware of the issues with Brian Ferentz, right? We remember the tirade he went on in 2017 in the press box against a referee. There have been things that have been said by Brian to the media that have had to, they basically had to retract. He's had to apologize for. Micaiah, where do you, how do you, because it is such a fine line, especially right now with how everybody's feeling about this across the college football landscape and just across the world in general. How do you differentiate racist intent and insensitivity? I don't really think it matters. I think whether the intent behind it is discrimination or not, the disrespect has to be solved. But how do you differentiate the two?
There's definitely a lot of disrespect going on. The problem in my case is obviously I'm not a person of color, so it's hard for me to tell. When racial slurs are thrown around and excessively disrespectful comments are made, especially with regards to a person's race, and judgments are made on that case. That's obviously racist. Most people are just insensitive, but racist people definitely exist. And I haven't had enough experience to really delineate between the two. But the easiest mark for me to tell would be when someone acts markedly different from a person of a light skin color or of one culture, you could say, versus someone from another background, someone with a different skin color from a different culture. If there's a big difference between the two and they're much ruder with someone else and their race, that's obviously racist. But I'm not going to go much further than that, because it's just, I personally don't have enough experience to tell. So I'm not going to make a concrete.
None of us really do. We can't really look at this and say, yeah, that's racist, that's not racist. And I think a lot of it is, you know, there's an old expression, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I think it also applies in the opposite direction. Ugliness can be in the eye of the beholder. There are players that have come out, white players that have said, listen, Coach Doyle told me I was going to fail and that I didn't deserve to be there, but that was his way of motivating me. But when you sag your pants down, put your ball cap on sideways, mock a player with a cultural type of epithet or drive, you're really dancing a line. Could we all agree on that? You are really dancing a really, really thin and gray line. And I think it's clear Coach Doyle has danced a lot of lines. He has been the common theme with all of this. He's been a guy that so many players have credited as being the guy who has put them in position to get to the next level physically. And a lot of players have credited him for making them better people. But as we know, not everyone is the same. We've seen a lot of guys who have left to transfer. We've seen a lot of guys who have left early for the NFL. Not saying most of those or half of those guys are, you know, as a result of how they felt about Coach Doyle or Brian Ferentz. You know, there have been some things said about Kirk. But the majority of guys that I think all of us respect, and again, we don't know these guys personally, but probably would tend to believe more so than maybe somebody that I'm not going to name names on this, because we can't just say just because somebody transferred that they're spiteful. But Desmond King, Jaleel Johnson, James Daniels, most of these guys they're coming to bat for Kirk Ferentz. You know, Akram Wadley didn't say anything bad about Kirk. George Kittle just basically said he supports his brothers. You know, there have been a few things that have been said. You know, anonymous player said that he believes that Coach Ferentz was aware of the problems. He's not innocent. He's aware of what Doyle has done, so that makes him responsible, and I think that's partially correct. The same guy said that Doyle made a comment about sending him back to the ghetto, and when he was called out, when this player called Doyle out in front of the other players, he was suspended, and Kirk told him that he was out of line and needed to apologize. You know, we can go on and on here, and DJ Johnson's a guy that, you know, we mentioned he just transferred out of the program. He kind of threw Phil Parker under the bus a little bit. Geno Stone spoke up and said, look, you and I both know Phil Parker is not the problem. And again, we can't speak for DJ Johnson's experiences. Neither can Geno Stone. But the common thread is, yeah, there have been things said about Phil. There have been things said about Kirk. But most of the smoke is coming from the Coach Doyle, and Coach Brian Ferentz, you know, strength and conditioning and the offensive coordinator room, so to speak, most of the smoke is coming from those two sources. And as again, as we typically say, where there's smoke, there's fire. So with that being said, let's hear from firsthand from a former Iowa player, a guy who we talked about earlier, very successful at Iowa, Amari Spivey, drafted in the third round of the NFL draft, started for the Detroit Lions, and also kind of was at a interesting time period, mid-Coach Ferentz era. And we have had some guys. Colin Sandeman spoke out from that era. LeBron Daniel was in that time frame. So was Mike Daniels. A lot of these guys that spoke out were from the last 8 to 10 years. Let's hear from Amari, and we'll get everybody's thoughts on what he has to say on this situation. So, again, this is Amari Spivey, former Detroit Lion and former Iowa Hawkeye.
Please be joined now by Amari Spivey, former Iowa defensive back, and obviously a difficult time to come on the program, but we appreciate Amari joining us this evening. First of all, let's stay positive for the time being, Amari. How are you guys doing? How's your family? Are you guys staying well during this pandemic?
Yeah, everybody's good. I was never really too worried about it. Yeah, everybody's doing good over here.
Great. Now, what are you doing after football? I know you stopped playing football in, I think, was it 2013? What's life been like after football for you?
It was relaxing, laid back. Recently, I started training kids in football. Many kids have been asking me about the time. I just want to take a break from football. But recently, I've been helping kids out, you know, sharing wisdom and, you know, and helping them potentially reach the level I went to.
Absolutely. And, of course, you played several years in the NFL for the Lions. Are you still actively, do you consider yourself a Lions fan?
I've never been a Lions fan in my life.
Okay, you're not. So what was your time like in Detroit? Did you enjoy that? Or how would you characterize your time in Detroit?
I did not enjoy it. It was cool. Obviously, it was cool being a NFL player, being a starter. But I feel like the organization was used to losing. Even when we did start winning, they made changes to help us start losing again. So it wasn't the best experience. And I know a lot of players that I played with would say the same.
Well, let's transition a little bit to your time at Iowa. Obviously, very successful. I think one of the things that I remember when you were at Iowa was, I don't know if it was Norm Parker or Phil Parker had said at one time that you were quite possibly the best cornerback ever to play at Iowa at that time, possibly. And so very highly regarded as an Iowa football player. But talk about your time as a person at Iowa. There's obviously been a lot that's come out these last couple of days from former African-American players that played at Iowa. Can you talk at all about your experiences as an Iowa football player?
My experiences were, well, first of all, my first year I got kicked out because of grades, because I actually got staph infection really bad. So that kind of like, you know, was a bad start. But I went to Iowa Central, got my grades up, got all of I think I got All-American, JUCO All-American. They gave me another scholarship. As far as like on the field stuff, it was fun. It was fine. I consider those guys, you know, my brothers. You know, we were a good group of guys. You know, we all competed. We all wanted to win. You know, we all were happy for each other with success. Regarding the stuff that's going on now, I did see a little bit of that. My personality, I don't tolerate stuff like that. So I feel like Doyle, he might have, you know, targeted guys that he felt like he'd get away with it. But my personality, I'm very straightforward. I don't speak much. So I never had that directed towards me. But I did see Doyle do some things to other players.
What was your relationship like with head coach Kirk Ferentz?
I thought he was a great guy. Thought he was a great coach. Didn't really have a, you know, a personal relationship with him. I'd have been a coach, a head coach. The only thing I would say about Iowa, I feel like they did treat certain players different. You know, looking back, you know, people tell me all the time, you know, I was one of the best DBs, maybe the best corner, I don't know. But I didn't feel that way when I was there. And that could be a good thing, but I feel like other players who probably maybe weren't as good as me, they got treated like they were one of the best or treated like they were a superstar or something. And it could have been because of their skin color. I don't know, but that's just how I felt. There were times where I didn't feel appreciated. There were times where I felt like, you know, they could have shown me more love, you know, but it is what it is. I'm not the type of person who dwells on stuff like that. You know, I know what I can do. I know where I want to go, and I was focused on that. You know, I think that's why I left as a junior, because I felt like if they would have shown me more love, I would have stayed.
Right.
But.
And obviously the turnover, unfortunately, with African-American players has been very, very startling, not only with players leaving early like yourself to the NFL, but also leaving into the transfer portal. Did you feel that some of the things that were said and done by Coach Doyle, and of course we've heard various stories from various people's experiences, and we can't comment on specific experiences because those are obviously unique and personal to each person, but did you feel like Coach Doyle was racially motivated, or did you feel that was just him trying to motivate everyone the same way and maybe a bit insensitive?
Doyle thinks he's a comedian. So okay. I feel like part of it was him joking around. But what he doesn't understand was we're from, like a lot of us are from the East Coast, or right. We're from, you know, places where we're not like surrounded by, you know, white people like that. So
yeah.
Going to Iowa, it's like almost like a culture shock.
Yeah.
To most of us, you know, so we don't want to hear racial slurs. I mean, jokes or that's not going to make us feel comfortable. You know, we're already uncomfortable.
Right.
Cause where we are, we've never been to the Midwest. A lot of us never been. I didn't even know when I was growing up, I didn't even know there was a state called Iowa. Until they sent me a letter. I was like, where's Iowa from? You know? So the fact that, you know, the fact that we are used to that environment or that culture, for him to do that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
And rightfully so, yeah.
You know?
And obviously this is before you were at Iowa, before Brian Ferentz became a coach, but did you have much interaction with Kirk's son, Brian?
No. All I remember was him getting in trouble.
Okay.
That one time. And I felt like, I don't remember what his punishment was, but I remember feeling like if it was one of us, it would have been more severe.
Right. Well, again, we appreciate you coming on here and talking about this. I know it's not easy. I don't know how much you followed what's happened over the last 24 hours at Kinnick Stadium, but can you kind of comment on the protesting and then the unfortunate violence and vandalism that's occurred to Kinnick Stadium and the Niall Kinnick statue?
I just seen that today. Somebody sent me a picture, but sometimes like I don't agree with generalizing things and destroying things, but sometimes that's what's needed to get attention to certain issues. So it's a bittersweet. It's like sometimes you're on a fence, you know, sometimes you can take it too far. Sometimes you don't take it far enough. But back to Doyle, there's one experience that I had that really, really rubbed me the wrong way with him. And it's probably going to be the last thing I say about it, about the situation. But when I was there, I remember it was like a recruit day or something like that. So we had recruits in, we had the parents, we were in a bubble, you know, having a good practice. And I think DJ, I forgot what DJ K did. Now remember, DJ K was a great player for Iowa. Like, he broke records. He saved our butts a couple times in big games.
Yeah.
And they treated DJ K so badly. That's when it really, that's when the Doyle thing started to rub me the wrong way. And they treated him so badly. Like, so we were in the bubble, right? It was recruit day, whatever. I don't know what they call it, but there's a lot of recruits, their parents, they were all in the bubble. And I think one of the rules were when the media comes to you, take your sunglasses off, no hat, stuff like that, right? We couldn't wear earrings or anything like that. Like, we had to be robots or whatever. There's no individuality at the time. We couldn't even wear colored gloves. Like, we had to wear gray gloves, whatever. But anyway, so he did an interview, I think, with his glasses on. And mind you, like, we could be on our way to practice, and then, like, the media would just run up to you real quick and start asking questions. I got caught doing that once. I got, like, caught by the media one time. Like, I'm about to walk into the door. Hey, Amari, can you answer a couple questions? So DJ K, he had his red glasses on, right, or whatever, and not thinking he's doing the interview. You know, they blasted him for that. Like, with something little like that. But anyway, so we're in a bubble, and I forgot what he did. Maybe it was from that interview or something else. But they, Doyle made him run around, run laps with a trash can on his head. But you know, those big Rubbermaid trash cans?
Yeah, and I remember DJ K telling that story.
Yeah, I could not, you know, I was so upset. So upset.
And so what was the purpose of that? What was the purpose of the trash can?
To humiliate him in front of all those people. I guarantee if DJ K was white, Doyle wouldn't have made him do that. Guarantee it.
And why do you say that? Why do you say that?
Because I feel like they treated the white players different then.
Right.
And that's why everybody's speaking up. Talking about him now. That's how it was.
We had DJ K on our show a couple of years back, and we didn't talk a whole lot about his relationship with coaches, but obviously that was a relationship that was very well publicized and whatnot, and given especially the circumstances that ended his career at Iowa. But we did reach out to DJ K, and he declined to comment on this current situation. But it is interesting that you are corroborating that story of the trash can, because that's something that we've heard on multiple occasions in the past. So I don't want to harp on this. I know you're not interested in talking about this much more. And frankly, we need to turn to something more positive. But how do you think, obviously, the change starts? I know many players have said it starts in the weight room, but I think you would probably agree, ultimately, it goes from the top down through the athletic department, through Kirk Ferentz as the head coach. What does Kirk and this athletic department do to begin to generate some change for this football program?
So the Iowa way is we're all the same. There's no individuality. Like, we couldn't do anything to our jersey to stand out, stuff like that, right? No ego. But if we're not allowed to have ego or be individuals, why does our weight training coach have an ego? Doyle had the biggest ego in the program. The biggest. Like, he was walking around like he was the man. And that's how he treated us. Mind you, we respected him because he's a weight training guy, whatever. We respected him, we respected Kirk Ferentz. But I feel like he sometimes did abuse his power.
I feel like you
need to hire coaches that don't have that ego. We're all a family, like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So do you think that this should cost Coach Doyle his job?
I don't know. But in this day and age, why would a black player want to go there after hearing all this? and so they have to make a decision. And I'm not trying to say black players are better than white players, but you know what black players do. You know what we can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? So you need black players, just like you need white players.
Right.
So, you know?
Well, again, I appreciate you comment on that, Amari. Let's kind of, before we end this phone call, let's just talk briefly about the Iowa program football-wise. Have you considered yourself an Iowa fan?
Yeah, I'm a fan.
What have you made of the last few years? It seems like Iowa's been close to getting over the hump as far as the division championship since 2015, when they actually won the division and nearly made it to 13-0. What do you see as Iowa's hurdle that they need to pass over as far as getting past Wisconsin and being able to win a West championship and maybe get back to the Rose Bowl or better?
Recruiting the right guys, letting guys do what they're best at doing, being more creative on offense, because if you don't have the athletes, you can't be predictable.
Right.
You know, if you don't have the speed, you can't be predictable. So I think just being more creative on offense, and maybe defense, I don't know. One thing that will help out a lot.
One more thing, and I don't want to revert back, but Kirk Ferentz did release a statement yesterday regarding the future and change changes that need to be made. Of course, Coach Doyle was placed on administrative leave, and Coach Ferentz did state that this social media ban was going to be lifted. Now, there's been some talk on social media, and of course, we take that with a grain of salt, but some rumors on social media that basically stated that this social media ban is going to be very limited, that everything is going to have to be passed through the university, whether that's true or not. Was the social media ban, do you think that was also as equally many players have come out and said, well, us having a voice or I guess lack thereof was equally as big of an issue while I was at Iowa. Would you agree with that statement? And do you think that's a major component to this, that this coaching staff needs to open up the airwaves and let these players speak?
So I was there, 2006. So Facebook was just coming out. There's no Instagram. I think,
right.
I don't know if there was a Twitter back then, but the reason why I understand the ban, because social media can be a distraction. And you could get in trouble. Like, so the big thing when we were coming up was, all right, don't post a picture of you drinking, because you could get in trouble or stuff like that. You know, don't say things that you regret. That was the reason why they told us, and I understood that.
So you never interpreted that as the administration or the coaching staff was trying to say.
Don't talk about it. Yeah, so they wouldn't talk about it, so we wouldn't speak. If you had a problem, go, like, see, I'm the type of person, if I have a problem, I'm going to go to you directly. I don't care who you are.
Right.
You know, so if any of the players, future, present, you have a problem with the coaches, go talk to them. Now, if they don't respond the way you want to respond, then maybe, you know, you have to use a different, you know, message, social media, whatever. But I think the first thing you always should do is speak to the guy man to man and then see what he says. Give him a chance to change, you know. So with Doyle, do they give him a chance to change? Will the change be genuine, or is he just trying to save his job? Like, that's what you got to, you know, think about, but.
Do you trust Kirk Ferentz to make the right decision with that? Do you think that he's up to the task to be able to make the right decision, even if it does cost him what, you know, Coach Doyle is largely known as maybe the best strength and conditioning coach in the country. He's the highest paid strength and conditioning coach in the country. Do you think Kirk Ferentz has the wherewithal to make that decision?
I don't know. I don't even think Kirk likes change, really. I don't think he likes change. So it's going to be tough.
His hand is being forced with this issue, unfortunately. What was your relationship like with Norm Parker?
I love Norm. I love Phil and Norm because those are my coaches. Those are the guys I dealt with the most.
Yeah.
When Norm made that video, I was like, wow, you know, that was awesome. He said that I'm the best corner they ever had.
Right.
You know, I wanted to stay just because of them.
So you never felt any of this maybe racial injustice with Coach Norm Parker?
No. I didn't feel it from the coaches. I felt it. I sensed it from Doyle, though. I did.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he was trying to be a comedian or whatever, but you can't do that to kids. We're kids. We're still kids.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And like I said, that we're not, like a lot of those white players, they're from Iowa. So they're used to, you know, they're home. We're not home. Like, there's a lot of us never left our state before. We've never been away from our moms, our dads, our neighborhoods, you know? So obviously we're going to be more sensitive to certain remarks.
Right.
But I don't know if Dawes is racist. I'm not saying he is. You know, maybe he just thinks he's funny. But like I said, we're kids. You don't know how we're going to react. We don't know, like, you know, some people might think it's funny. And some people might not. So that's what he should have been smart about.
And there were stories that he stepped on kids' fingers as they were working out and whatnot. And whether those were racially motivated or not, I think that's probably, like you said, something that he's going to have to look deep into his own soul and heart and really discern. And hopefully he can, whatever changes need to be made. Obviously, I think the bottom line for this discussion, Amari, is there needs to be changes, whether it's soul searching for him or maybe just increased sensitivity and awareness. It seems like there's been a lack of awareness for many years. So finally, the last thing I want to ask you, Phil Parker, there were some things that came out from and I'm not going to name his name. You can probably go on social media if you're interested in doing this, but a cornerback that recently transferred from Iowa that kind of called Phil Parker out for some things that he viewed as racially insensitive. Geno Stone was quick to jump on social media and defend Phil Parker. Sounds like you were pretty close to him. Did you ever get that sort of a uncomfortability with Phil Parker?
No, never. Phil Parker, at the time, he was an assistant. He loved me. You know, he saw the potential in me. He actually wanted me to stay. He said, Mark, you could be my first rounder if you stay. You know, so, you know, he taught me. When I came in, I was an athlete. I wasn't a corner, but he saw my potential, and he coached me up. He's like, you could be one of the best, you know, if you listen to me. You know, he never made any slick remarks. You know, he was a man's man. Like, he'll tell you straight up. You know what I'm saying? If you're doing something wrong, you know, he's like a father, you know. But I never got any. No, not from us.
Well,
I'm not when I was there.
Again, Amari, we really appreciate you joining us on here. And I guess this is your opportunity to voice anything you have on your mind. Is there anything else that you want to say about Coach Ferentz, about this football program, the state of mind, where we're at right now, anything at all?
My thing is respect. No matter what color your skin is, no matter if I like you or not, if we respect each other, that goes a long way. That covers everything. Like, I might not like you, but I'm going to respect you. I might not agree with you, but I'm going to respect you. So if we learn to respect each other, treat people how we want to be treated. We all heard that millions of times. Then we're good. No matter what position you're in, if you're a head coach, if you're the highest paid strength coach in the nation, respect people. You know, if Doyle took the time to respect people, he wouldn't be in this situation right now.
World would be a very different place if everybody had that sort of a mindset of mine. So,
even if you're racist, you might not like my skin, but just respect me.
Right.
We'll have no problem. You know.
Absolutely, Amari. Hey, man, we really appreciate you coming on here, and hopefully we'll get to you'll be kind enough to join us again, maybe at a better time, and we can talk some actual football. We'll be past this pandemic. We'll be past, hopefully there'll be some cultural changes that take place inside the Iowa program, and we'll be able to have a more positive conversation in the future, Amari. So again, we appreciate it, and you and your family take care and stay safe.
You too, man. No problem. Anytime.
What a great guy. What a great interview. Alex, let's go to you first. Your thoughts on Amari's words on the program, on everything.
Oh, well, there's a lot to talk about there.
To digest.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's not a big surprise as far as what he's talking about with kind of the culture of Iowa City. I mean, just from the eye test and, you know, living close to there, you can tell that it's a very white area, in one of the whitest schools around. And so you can definitely, it makes sense that somebody who's coming from, you know, like, I don't know where he's from exactly, but somewhere that's not the Midwest, that it's going to be, like you said, a bit of a culture shock. And, so that was interesting to hear, but not totally surprising. One thing that was interesting that he said about Chris Doyle, and, you know, if he continues to have his job there, is, especially now with everything that's going on, how much are black players going to want to play for Iowa, you know? And Iowa's already at a severe disadvantage recruiting-wise. He talked a bit about that, how that's one of the keys to them getting over the hump is recruiting. And, man, it's going to be tough if they were to keep Chris Doyle on and there weren't. I don't know. It's hard for me to picture a scenario where they keep him and, you know, it doesn't affect their recruiting. That's going to be a big problem. But, yeah, I'll pass it over to you. There's a lot to think about, and it's good to hear from a guy who's so straight about everything. You know, he just tells it how it is. So that was a great interview.
Yeah. And I told him after I appreciated his candor on this. Cause I can't imagine it's easy for any of these guys. You know, they bleed black and gold, to be able to come forward like that and talk about it. I think we all agree. None of us like the idea of living in ignorance of this thing. And this is a thing. This is something that is a problem. It's something that's obviously been a problem. Amari talked about him. He registered in 2006. 2006. Do you realize that's 14 years ago? And there were issues in 2006. You know, he talked about the experience with DJK and. You know, I'm not going to get into my conversation with Durrell yesterday, but I will say he was not interested in talking about this issue. We opened the door for him. We gave him an opportunity to have his voice be heard on the show. He respectfully declined. We had him on a couple of years ago. Great interview. We know he just got a new job. We you know, would have been happy to talk to him about that, but I get it. He didn't want to talk about this, and I respect him for that because we know that DJK and Kirk Ferentz, they had a falling out. That relationship was not what we would have all, as fans, what we would have liked to have seen for a player and his coach. But again, I'm with you, Alex. I think Amari came on here and was. I think he hit every point that needs to be hit. We've got to respect one another. Coaches have to respect the players. Players have to respect the coaches. And we've got to have some understanding as far as backgrounds. And to me, and we talked about it before the interview, it seems like the issue here, the biggest issue, is lack of understanding and lack of sensitivity. And none of us can sit here and say Chris Doyle's a racist. We can't say that. We can't say that about Brian Ferentz. But we can say pretty definitively, based on these experiences that have been told, what Amari talked about, that Chris Doyle has some issues that he clearly has to fix, has to address. Noah, what were your thoughts on what Amari had to say on the show?
Well, I was going to pick up from where that conversation you were just having and how it all boils down to what he said, having respect for someone. Even if you don't like someone, whether for whatever reason, if you respect them, that covers over a lot of the problems that are showing up in these players' experiences that they're sharing. So just having that respect for people, and as you said, going both ways, for coaches to players, players to coaches, having that respect would be crucial in fixing whatever problems are going on in the coaching staff.
Micaiah?
It's been a long time since he was a Hawkeye, and the majority of his career actually predates when I've started following the Hawkeye football program in earnest. So I'm not too familiar with that time period, but I will say it definitely sounds like he has a lot of respect for that coaching staff. Nothing's certainly could have changed, even in the people that are still there from his time. It, like you said, it's been a lot of, it's been several years since he was there, but, you know, it's nice to hear that someone has, that kind of respect for those people, even with the allegations that have been made, but still that there are problems, acknowledging that there are problems that need to be addressed. And that respect for other people, regardless of who they are, is very important, which is true.
And whoever was behind that trash can incident with DJK, whether that was Chris Doyle, and I don't know that Amari specifically alluded to who was behind that. I'd have to listen back to that interview again. Maybe one of you guys caught that, but whoever was behind that, That was inappropriate.
I think it was because, you know, making him run laps and stuff. I think I got the impression that it was Doyle that was responsible for that. But yeah, I don't remember exactly what he said.
How do you do that in front of a bunch of recruits and their parents?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't understand that.
Parents, how do you do that in the first place?
I mean, what? Yeah, you're trying to humiliate a kid. I mean, what? I don't get it.
It's interesting because we've seen, I can speak from my own personal experience in high school that, you know, sometimes if somebody does something really outrageous, a coach will try and humiliate them in a way. But the pattern we're seeing here and that I'm picking up on heavily from Amari's interview and from the other guys on Twitter, it's that there's a clear disparity of how Doyle treats players based on their skin color. You know, we've seen a lot of, and you kind of expect to an extent with a strength and conditioning coach, a bit of meatheadedness and kind of that macho way about them. I mean, they're basically weightlifters, and you expect that to an extent, but I think the line is, and I think we've seen that at other schools too, player abuse. But this seems to me more clear that he treats different players differently, and feeling that most players have gotten from it is that it's based on their skin color. So I think that's really that's the line that's being drawn.
And again, we've talked at length about DJK, and we've tried not to delve into that relationship, DJK and Kirk Ferentz. That was 10 years ago. But at the same time, Amari brought this up, and I think a lot of people, when DJK came out with all this stuff, you know, we know that he had been arrested on drug charges. And I think a lot of people looked at his situation and said, he had a lot of spite and, you know, kind of just had some sour grapes on the situation and how it ended at Iowa. But Amari brought this up, and it is an example that's worth noting. Because if you look at that, I find that very impressive. You have all these players who have come forward and said, look, I was not treated appropriately, or I saw someone else not treated appropriately. You know the one guy we haven't heard from? DJK. I find that very fascinating. And again, he was going to talk to us. I left the door open to him. I told him, look, we want to ask you about the situation. If you're not comfortable, we understand. He wasn't comfortable with it. And I applaud him for that. He's spoken his piece about this. And maybe he feels he's moved on from Iowa, from the situation. He doesn't want to talk about the coaching staff. But boy, Alex, wouldn't you agree, if you're looking to throw dirt on somebody, if you're looking to denigrate a legend of a coach in Kirk Ferentz, if there's ever a time to do that, it's right now. Now, who knows? Maybe he will take to social media this week and say something. I don't know. But don't you find that impressive from a kid that many people thought was kind of a loose cannon in his younger years? DJK is one of the few guys we're not hearing from. And as we gave him yesterday, we gave him an opportunity to speak on it, and he took the high road, I believe.
Well, you know, one thing that Amari brought up that makes a lot of sense is, you know, these guys are kids when they're at Iowa, when they're in college. They're, what, 18 to 22-year-old kids. And so, you know, a lot of the behavior that you see out of players is typical for younger guys. But you're talking about a guy, I'm not sure how old DJK is right now, but quite a bit older than that. Than the average college kid. So he's obviously, at least for now, measuring, you know, what he wants to do. And it makes me wonder if he has any reservations about talking about it due to everything that, I mean, you have to think it might have something to do with, like you were talking about, the way things ended for him at Iowa. If he feels like that would, I don't know.
Well, remember, he was extremely vocal about his issues with Kirk Ferentz. In fact, I don't know if it ever got published. I never read the book. He said he was publishing a book that was basically going to expose Kirk Ferentz and the staff about his complaints. One of the few guys that have really been vocal about their time at Iowa, even after their time at Iowa. And that's why I'm particularly infatuated by the fact that he has refused to comment now. But again, are these conversations that need to be had? Absolutely. But I look at it and say, you know what? If Durrell doesn't want to come forward, he's saying, you know, maybe he's saying, I don't want to put words in the guy's mouth, but these other guys are saying what needs to be said. And is there really a need for DJK to say more? I don't know. Do you see my line of thinking here, Noah?
Yeah, I can see where you're going with it. And I would agree. At this point, enough has been said, and people are noticing that there is a problem. So there isn't really a need for him to pile on at this point. And that, I'd agree with you. He's taking the high road at that point, especially if in the past he has already aired whatever grievances he has against members of coaching staff.
Does this, And we can talk a little bit about this as we finish up our show today, and we'll talk about it moving forward. But does this change your guys' view of this program? I mean, obviously it does to a degree. Does it change your view of Kirk Ferentz? I guess let's talk about that, because we asked Amari specifically, how do you feel about Kirk? He thinks he's a great guy. He indicated he wasn't real close to Coach Ferentz, but he thought he's a great guy. Didn't have anything bad to say about Kirk Ferentz.
That seems to be a fairly common thread.
There have been things that have been said about Kirk. Whether they're true or not, we don't know. But the complaints have been few and far between, right? And there's always going to be some. I mean, you think about how many hundreds of guys he's had come to the program. There's going to be some guys that maybe he had a bad day with or a run-in with. And again, we can't speak to that. But does this change any of your guys' viewpoints on Coach Ferentz and his legacy at Iowa?
Well, I think for me, I mean, it'll depend on how much, first of all, how much he's aware of what's been going on with Doyle, and how much what lengths he's gone to fix that, and what he does here moving forward is probably the most important thing. So it'll be interesting to see this unfold. It's fresh enough now, it's hard to really get a grasp on his involvement in everything. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Okay.
There's an impact that's going to be made on his legacy, on the people around him, regardless of whether he was involved, was insensitive or racist in some way or not. And it seems at this point pretty safe to say not, but we don't know for sure. None of us have been through that program. And obviously none of us are of color, so comments and situations that were made are difficult for us to judge. But
I don't mean to interrupt or throw humor onto a very serious subject, but Micaiah, you haven't been through the Iowa.
No, I know it's hard to believe.
Your physique just screams Chris Doyle. You are bald. Yeah. Hey, you are bald, like Chris.
Bald by choice. Thank you very much.
Yeah, go on with what you were. Sorry to interrupt.
Anyways, no, it's a very serious thing, and with Coach Ferentz, he seems like a very nice guy. He's very respectable, and it seems like a lot of his players very very much respect him. So it's not good if it does impact him. At this point, it doesn't look like it's going to impact him very much. But just by the nature of him being involved and being the head of that program, apart from the athletic director, he's the head coach. He's the head of the football team. That's his program. And, you know, those coaches, they report to him. They respond to him, and they follow his leadership. So that in a somewhat of a manner makes him involved in this. At least to a very minor extent, which is going to leave an impact on him and his legacy. I still think he's a great coach, and I think he's a great guy, at least from what I've seen. I don't want to say anything bad about Coach Ferentz, but, you know, this is not the kind of thing that can just be brushed under the rug and dismissed. He is attached to these other entities, these other people that have had these remarks made about them and their character. So that has to be, you know, reflected in that.
I look at the situation and I think to myself, there's been so many players that have come forward. In fact, it seems like we can't talk about it. I mean, how many hundreds of players have been through the program, but we talked about Matt Vandenberg, Tavon Smith, Brad Banks came out today and I think at least retweeted something or you know, some action on this. Of course, he was a Heisman finalist, I believe. Albert Young, former running back, came out and said something. We had Amari on the show. Geno Stone made comments. And, of course, he was here just last year, James Daniels, Mike Daniels, LeBron Daniel, Maurice Fleming, Manny Rugamba. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I think we all agree that there's an issue, and I'm shocked. I know the George Floyd issue in Minneapolis has certainly made the black community feel like they can speak more on issues. But are you at all surprised that at some point none of this really slipped out? Some of these guys had left the program, and I know, you know, they don't so some of the reasoning I've read and even from some of these players who have tweeted about it is they've held back saying anything because they don't want to be looked down on publicly in a way that would be perceived as, okay, they've got sour grapes or, you know, they're just a bad apple. But, you know, even James Daniels, here's a guy who's starting for the Bears, very respected within the program, but he's the younger brother of LaShawn Daniels. And I know some of the things that have been said by some players, very, very harsh things, like, again, I'm paraphrasing this, and I don't know exactly, I'd have to look who exactly said this, but one player basically stated, look, we haven't enjoyed our time at Iowa, but we knew what Iowa could do for us as far as the next level is concerned. That was a transfer that said that. So, you know, again, maybe take it with a grain of salt. A lot of players, including Amari, enjoyed their time at Iowa. But, you know, it's comments like that. I look at James Daniels and I say, so did he just come to Iowa because he thought that was the best school that could get him to the next level? Obviously, everybody wants to play in the NFL. If you're playing college football, you probably want to play in the NFL. But he could have went to Wisconsin. Here's a kid who was highly recruited. I guess my question is, his older brother was here. Even amongst the two of them, wouldn't LaShawn share that with James? I mean, am I off track on this? Is that not odd that James would have decided to come to Iowa after his brother had been in the program for a year or two and that would have never been an issue in the recruiting process? Because we can make an argument that, okay, you know, these African American recruits that come to Iowa don't have any idea what they're getting into until they get there. But James Daniels had to have known or had some sort of an idea. Am I wrong?
I mean, you could definitely say that certain guys might get picked on more than others for, you know, maybe their personalities. And maybe those two brothers, who knows? I don't know much about them, but maybe they had different personalities. Maybe one of them was more of a target for Doyle. There's a lot of factors.
And maybe neither of them. Maybe neither of them were targets, and maybe this was just something that James Daniels observed. LaShawn really hasn't said a whole lot on Twitter since this all broke out, but James has. And that's just why I found this somewhat interesting. But it seems like
most you don't want to have to talk to him to get a good idea.
Noah, where does Iowa go from here? I mean, we're going to – just a second. We're going to play – the statement that Kirk Ferentz made yesterday publicly, very powerful statement, and I thought it was a statement that was a good place to start. It's going to be a road here. These things don't change overnight. But do you get rid of Coach Doyle? Do you get rid of your son, Brian? Do you step down? I mean, I know that's going that's taking an extreme measure here, but Kirk Ferentz is not getting any younger, and I think most of us would agree he's not going to be here for more than three or four more years. What happens at Iowa now?
Honestly, it would have to depend on what they think can be done to Doyle and Brian Ferentz, and do they think they can change, and not just outwardly, but inwardly. Can they change who they are inside to be more sensitive to how these people feel, how they would react to certain comments that are made? And if you don't think that they can, then you'll have to remove them. Because at this point, it's not just that some people are having some issues with members of the coaching staff. These players are all working together as a team. The coaches are all working together as a team. You can't have somebody on the team that is tearing down other members of the team. You just, it can't happen that way for a team to work well and for everybody to enjoy their time there. But as to whether or not Doyle and Brian Ferentz should go, I don't know. I haven't seen it in person, so I can't make a judgment on their character and whether or not they can change or will change.
Well, one guy that we think has seen some of these things in person is Kirk Ferentz, right? I think we all agree there's no way he could be employed with Coach Doyle for 22 years and not see some of this stuff. I think we all agree Kirk Ferentz deserves a share of this responsibility. Not saying he's a racist, not saying that, you know, he's a nasty person. We're not going there. But, and I'm also not saying he swept this under the rug, because it sounds like he has begun to make some steps towards progress, but it sounds like they need to be more severe steps. Would we all agree, Ferentz, Kirk was aware of some of these things? I mean, there's no way you can't be. You're the head coach of a Division I Big Ten football program. You're the dean of football. You know what, what's going on in your program. And if you don't know what's going on in your program, shame on you just as much.
After so many years, he has to know at least bits and pieces of what was going on, if not a pretty good amount of what was going on.
And there have been plenty of coaches who have been fired because they claimed that they didn't know what was going on in their football program. And obviously, you know, you're either an idiot, in which case you don't deserve to be the coach, or you have at least some idea of what's going on.
We're
turning a blind eye to it. Now, this is not, it's a different issue. This is something that's a more on a person-to-person basis. But then more blatant crimes that might have been committed. This is obviously something that's terrible. But you know, it's almost impossible to believe that Ferentz did not know at least a little of what was going on.
And again, if he didn't know, I mean, there's no way he can avoid blame here. And I don't think Kirk Ferentz is the type of guy who's going to try to avoid blame. But there's no way you can avoid blame here, because if you say, look, I didn't know, well, why didn't you know? Why are you
well,
not?
Well, didn't you read a quote that he had been making, you know, trying to make changes, and he was aware of this issue?
He was aware of some issues. I think one of those issues that he was aware of and that the coaching staff had outwardly tried to correct was the fact that so many black players were transferring. And here's a quote from it. I'll say one more thing on Mr. Spivey's interview with us today. This was a telling quote. Amari said, and I quote, "If I had felt more love, I probably would have stayed." And he was speaking about his final year as a Hawkeye. He elected to go pro a year early. And Noah, is there not a more profound statement than that one right there? Had I felt more love, I probably would have stayed.
That is very telling.
And again, I think that sums it up, doesn't it? I mean, whether it's racist or not, this is a cultural issue that needs to be resolved. Whether it's racist, and I'm not here to say, again, I don't think any of us, that's racist. It may have been perceived as racism. Maybe Chris Doyle, Brian Ferentz, the things that were said, they didn't mean him in a racist way. Maybe it wasn't a race. Maybe they're incredibly insensitive. But whether they're insensitive, racist, just plain old jerks, whatever the case may be, it's got to be fixed. Now, here is what Kirk had to say yesterday on the issue. Of course, this just cropped up
Friday
night.
We agreed last Thursday to lift a long-standing ban on social media.
get this bet. Credit to Hawkeye Sports on this, but here is head coach Kirk Ferentz on the ongoing issues that cropped up beginning Friday night.
This is a defining moment for the Iowa Hawkeye football program. Over the past 24 hours, I've seen some difficult and heartbreaking posts on social media. I appreciate the former players' candor and have been reaching out to many of them individually and will continue to do so moving forward to learn more about their experiences in our program. I am planning on talking to many more of them in the coming days. This is a process. It's going to take some time, but change again starts by listening first. Many of the discussions have centered around our strength and conditioning program and Coach Chris Doyle. I've spoken with him about the allegations posted on social media. They're troubling and have created a lasting impact on those players. Therefore, Coach Doyle has been placed on administrative leave immediately while an independent review can take place. He and I agree that all parties have to have their voices heard, and then a decision about how we move forward will take place. There's been a call for a cultural shift in our program. Therefore, I'm creating an advisory committee chaired by a former player and comprised of current and former players, as well as departmental staff. This will be a diverse group that will be able to share without judgment so we can all examine where we are today and how we can have a better environment tomorrow. Football is a game of discipline and sacrifice. In our program, we have high standards, accountability, and we have a good team of players, coaches, and staff members. But it's clear we can all do more to creating a better environment, a respectful environment, one where every player can grow, develop, and become the best version of himself. As I told the team earlier this week, I'm a white football coach. Teaching is what I do. But I also know it's important to know when to be the student. Several days ago, several players reached out to me to ask for permission to go on social media to participate in the discussion, the national discussion about social injustice, racism, and inequality. As a team, we agreed last Thursday to lift the longstanding ban on social media, so you will be seeing them enter the now broader conversation. These are painful times. As a leader, you can learn a lot by listening, but at some point you must take action. Finally, I told the team that change will begin with us. In reality, it begins with me.
Your guys' thoughts, excuse me, your guys' thoughts on, I promise I wasn't crying. your guys' thoughts on Coach Ferentz and his words there.
Well, it's something that has come to his attention, and like I said, he definitely at least seems like a very nice guy. Like he's not part of the issue. And as bad as it looks, no university, no football program is without its problems, without its jerks or bad coaches. So this is far from a unique case, but it's definitely a troubling one. At least it looks like they're willing to take steps, to take measures that things have already been put in place, so that hopefully they can resolve these issues and move forward, which it definitely looks like. He acknowledged right at the end of that video, that clip, that as a leader, as a coach of the team, it was his job to change along with the other coaches and the rest of the team, that this is something that they would all have to do moving forward, which was good.
Alex?
Well, like I said, it still kind of remains to be seen if we find out how much he was aware of this issue before. You know, he didn't really address that at all, which I didn't expect, but you know, I mean, it's definitely possible that Doyle could have been on his best behavior when Ferentz was around, maybe. I'm trying to think of how he, you know, might not be aware of that. It's hard to know if players, and if that was the case, if players would still come forward to him about what they felt was discrimination against themselves. But, you know, I think it is possible maybe that he wasn't overly aware of this issue, but it's also very possible that he was. So, you know, I don't think he's going to talk about that yet, but I'm sure it'll come to light eventually. So I'm kind of more on the wait and see side of things and just see how this plays out.
There were a couple examples in some tweets. Akram Wadley's mom claimed that she went to Kirk Ferentz about Brian Ferentz's comments towards Akram about the whole, you know, you're going to go rob a liquor store comments. That was, according to her, those comments were made twice. And according to her, that issue was raised with Coach Kirk Ferentz in early 2018. So we know he's aware of some of these things. Noah, what was your take on the statement from Captain Kirk on Sunday?
Captain Kirk.
That's right.
What stood out to me was the part where he mentioned that it's important to listen. And in his situation, of course, we don't know. We've said this so many times on this podcast. We don't know how much he knew about what was going on. It could be basically everything. It could be not very much at all. We don't know. But no matter what it was before, it has to change now. You have to listen now. And you have to take steps now. And make improvements going forward. And it sounded like in the statement that he made that he understands that and is ready to do that. And so the question I would like to ask you, Corey, is what do you think of this advisory council that they're putting together with former players and other members?
Well, I think it's smart. I think it's, you know, it's the right idea. I think you need to include guys like James Daniels, guys like Jordan Lomax, guys who have spoken out against this. This is more than just an issue. This is also public perception, and that's not the main issue. We've got to look at how people are being treated within the program, white, black, whatever. But you brought it up, Alex, and Amari brought it up. Recruiting is going to be an issue. That is going to be an issue. So Kirk's going to have to really make these decisions. I don't think it's all going to be up to him. I think Gary Barta is going to have some say on this as well. And we all know Gary Barta on some decisions it's kind of been, his decision-making has been questioned a few times over the course of his career at Iowa. But yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to Kirk is going to really have to take ownership of this program right now. And this is a change not only for his legacy, but for the future of Iowa, for the state of Iowa, for players, former players, parents, coaches that are at Iowa right now. This affects everybody. And I think he's really going to have to take a stand and say, look, this is my program and I gotta make this right. And I think he will do that. I do like the advisory idea. I do want to share real quickly before we finish this podcast off. I want to read a quote from Chris Doyle. And Kirk Ferentz did, as you see here, we're looking at the Hawkeye Football Twitter account. Kirk Ferentz had made a couple statements before that video statement, but that's the most recent of the statements. He did have a press conference with staff or with media today. If you want to watch that, I'm sure you can find that online. But I'm going to read you this statement from Chris Doyle. Dated Sunday, June 7th, and I quote, "For 21 years, I've committed my life to Iowa football and loved with all my heart every single one of the young men I've gotten to work with and every minute we have spent together in the weight room, on the field, and as friends and fellow Hawkeyes. I can only imagine how much courage it took for them to speak out on these serious matters. I am proud of them. My job has been to give feedback to our players for 21 years, and now I am receiving feedback myself. I can take it, and I won't hide from it. It saddens me to hear the stories of their difficult experiences while in our program, in addition to the outpouring of stories we are hearing across the country. It is time to listen, learn, and grow. More importantly, it's a time for action. I have been asked to remain silent. That is impossible for me to do. There have been statements made about my behavior that are not true. I do not claim to be perfect. I've made mistakes, learned lessons, and like every American citizen, can do better. At no time have I ever crossed the line, and I'll repeat that, at no time have I ever crossed the line of unethical behavior or bias based upon race. I do not make racist comments, and I don't tolerate people who do. I am confident that a complete review of the body of work over 21 years will speak for itself, and I am trusting the process to respect the rights and experiences of all parties involved. There are countless men of character who are better fathers, husbands, activists, leaders, and contributors to society due to their experience at Iowa football. The record will show this. Signed, Sunday, June 7th, Chris Doyle. Anybody?
I mean, it's the response to expect, I think.
I don't know. Well, first of all, he never apologized, right? He never actually said, "I'm sorry for the pain I've caused," right? And to say, I have never. Let's see. At no time have I ever crossed the line of unethical behavior or bias based upon race. I do not make racist comments, and I don't tolerate people who do. And he ends the letter, the statement, by saying, "The record will show that I'm right in this." I don't know that that's the way you go about this.
He might not have crossed his line, but it's not really his line that counts or matters. And he might not be racist in his own eyes, but it's not his view of himself that really matters. It's what the people around him think. That's what's really important. A lot of racist people don't think that they're racist. Now, I'm not saying that he is. And a lot of this, when it comes to emotions being hurt, people have a tendency to exaggerate. But is he actually a racist? I don't know how many times we've said this. We don't know. But it's
hey,
not
is he a racist? Is he a racist, Micaiah? I know. We've said that. But you know what? I think it's worth repeating, because we don't want to feel like we're taking a side here. We don't know. We were not there. We do know that we have an extreme amount of testimony, right? Both written and verbal. And I just don't see how defending yourself at all right now is the way to go. Noah?
I'm going to agree with you on this, Corey. At this point, it seems a little bit... I can't find the exact term I want to use.
Counterproductive.
The best way I can describe it is too little, too late. Like, he's saying he's not in the wrong, but people's feelings have been hurt by you. So it's not a matter of whether you think you were wrong. It's a matter of damage has been done. It's time to make reparations.
Yeah. And as he said, this doesn't sound like a statement that was prompted by the university. According to him, he was asked not to speak right now. So this is sound, and I believe that based on how this statement was written. To me, this did not sound like a statement that was edited or proofread by the University of Iowa.
Yeah, I doubt it.
Alex?
There would have been an apology in it otherwise. At least a more clear-cut one.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's definitely not. It doesn't seem like a polished type of response. You know, it's hard to know if he's being genuine or he thinks that he hasn't said anything that has racist intent or if he's trying to cover for himself in that way, you know, there's no way to know, but, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You don't typically see a guy come out and have that kind of a, rebuttal against what's coming out. And it does make me think that he probably did that of his own accord without, advisory from anybody else. So, yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Well, we've beat this dead horse for far too long. And as we finished up our interview with Amari by saying it's true, we want to get back to football. Man, this has been a rough calendar year. Can we all agree on that?
Hey, the first 2 months.
Oh, hey, first 2 months were great. We had NBA rolling. Look at the Iowa Hawkeye team. Luca Garza having one of the best seasons in Hawkeye history, maybe the best season in Hawkeye history.
And there was
March. Yeah, March hit, and yeah, it was over. And it doesn't seem to be getting any better. We talked about the virus seems to be getting a little better, which is good. We're getting NBA. We didn't really have time to talk about that. I guess we can go real quickly. I'm not going to hit 2 hours. I promise I'm not going to hit 2 hours on this podcast.
We're only 15 minutes away.
I know. But we do get to see NBA on July 31st. We got a 22-game format. Kirko's, you happy about it?
Well, of course. The NBA is back.
Yeah, in some form. Exists. In some form.
So the short version is there are 13 Western Conference teams and 9 Eastern Conference teams. They play 8 regular season seeding games. That's what they're going to call them, I guess. And there's a possible play-in tournament for the 8th seed.
Between the 9th and 8th team. If the 9th team is within, like, 2 games of the 8th seed? 3 games?
I can't remember.
And the ninth seed would have to beat the 8th seed in a best of 3, they'd have to win twice, basically.
Okay.
It's a double elimination for the 9th seed, but if the 8th seed wins once, they advance. That's what I heard.
Wait a minute.
It was on a podcast.
How could it be best of 3?
It's not a best of 3. It's kind of like a best of 3.
It's a double elimination. For one of the teams.
To me, yeah. The interesting thing about this is how they have 13 Western Conference teams and only 9 Eastern Conference teams.
Do you know how bad the bottom of the Eastern Conference is?
Yeah, it's been that way for years.
You want the Charlotte Hornets in the playoffs? I didn't think so.
Does Michael Jordan still own Charlotte?
He's the second bottom 5 owner in the NBA. He's definitely not the worst. James Dolan. Shout outs to James Dolan.
Oh,
but
man, let's not get started on that. Charles Oakley. Oh man. Hasn't he banned like a bunch of people from coming back because they've heckled him?
Yeah, pretty much. Jordan's just not a good owner, like in terms of making decisions. It has nothing to do with relating to the fans or kicking players out or whatever.
The best players in the world usually aren't good coaches because it comes so easy to them, and so it's hard for them to relate. Look at a guy
did you ever hear why Larry Bird stopped coaching the Pacers? He won like 2 Coach of the Year awards in 5 years or something, and he just stopped, even though he was doing great.
What happened with him?
From what I've heard, and I didn't hear this directly from him, it was from someone else who knew him. They said that he could not get his players to see the game the way he saw it, that nobody else could think that many steps ahead, could make those kinds of plays and moves in their heads. And it frustrated him to no end. Even though he was successful, he just couldn't handle it. Because nobody else was Larry Bird, but Larry Bird.
Yeah, a lot
and
of
I'm sure Jordan would be the same way.
The best players in the world have the edge mentally and physically, and the average, even the average NBA player, cannot, especially at that. Especially if you're talking college. Look at a guy like Isaiah Thomas. He's been a coach in college for years, never been very successful. Patrick Ewing right now is at Georgetown. He's not crossed over the hurdle yet. Is it Penny Hardaway? I think Penny Hardaway is at Memphis right now, and so
yeah,
far
he's
Memphis,
at Memphis
has not been. So yeah, I mean I'm not saying these guys can't succeed or won't succeed. Juwan Howard's at Michigan, and of course Michigan's a historical program. But yeah, I agree. But it will be interesting to see 22 teams, July 31st. We'll get some to talk about again, right? Besides
golf and NASCAR.
One more question, and Alex, we'll kind of leave this one for you. I think do we all agree we're going to see football this fall?
Yes. No fans in the stadium.
No fans at all. No fans at all.
No.
Noah, some fans, half capacity, third capacity, no fans, full house. What do you call it?
I think the expectation is right now that there are going to be no fans.
Alex? I still think there's going to be some fans, but I could be wrong.
Trying to predict the future here. I don't know. I mean, as of right now, if I had to bet on it, I guess I'd say playing but no fans, but yeah, it's impossible to say for sure.
You may not agree with it, Alex. It's probably what they're going to end up doing.
Oh boy, Noah's bringing out the big guns on Alex right now.
Alex isn't the only one. LeBron James himself said, "What is sports without the fans?"
I don't want to hear what LeBron James has to say on anything. I've never. And this, you know, he's got a right to speak, but he's just got something to say on everything. And he has a right to say stuff about, you know, the racial issues or politics or whatever, but he just has something to say on everything. And I get tired of that after a while. I don't know.
I think it's because people expect him to have something to say.
I guess that might be. I don't know. But Alex, I was going to ask you, this cultural change, I think Kirk Ferentz is up to the task, but it's not going to be overnight. What will things look like in the fall? Will it just be normal again? We don't know what's going to happen to Chris Doyle. We don't know what's going to happen to Brian Ferentz. I would say Brian Ferentz is not going to get fired, but I do think, guys, this is a huge impact on Iowa for the next 20 years because a lot of people thought Brian Ferentz is going to take over. I see no way, even if he doesn't get fired, suspended, and I think he'll get suspended, by the way, but even if he doesn't, I see no way that Brian Ferentz will ever be the head coach at Iowa.
It's going to be a stain on his legacy.
Oh, yeah. I see no way that's going to happen at this point. I could be wrong on that, but I see no way. And I'll tell you who I'd love to see as the next head coach at Iowa, and I probably have said this before, but Phil Parker, hire this guy. Look at Iowa's defense year in and year out. Guys have had nothing but good to say about him. Amari Spivey had some things that were nice to hear about his former defensive backs coach and current defensive coordinator at Iowa. So that'd be a guy I would endorse. But well, Alex, what do you think football is going to look like? Is it going to look normal in the fall as far as the pandemic and the fans, but from an Iowa football standpoint, what we're used to seeing?
Well, first of all, talking about Brian Ferentz, I mean, do any of you guys see enough from him merit-wise to qualify him to be the next head coach, aside from who he's related to?
But I think the overwhelming opinion on this was, okay, Ferentz, Kirk, say he retires in 2-3 years. If they've won a Big Ten championship or two, the offense becomes what we think it can become, where they've got all these receivers this year, they've got Tyler Goodson at running back, they've got Sam Laporta, and they have been building and getting better with better weapons, but I think the overwhelming opinion is, okay, he has a couple solid Big Ten title years, then we could see the mantle being handed to him. But I just don't think that's going to happen either way at this point.
No, I don't think
I mean, to me, a lot of that is, you know, it could actually really hurt his chances if you have all these weapons and you don't do anything with them. I mean, that's his job, so To me, I just haven't seen anything to suggest that he's the rightful heir to any kind of Ferentz's throne. It just doesn't. I haven't seen it yet. We've been waiting, and so, anyways, yeah. As far as the Iowa program, how it'll look, I think it'll depend on what comes out here in the next week or two. A lot of it, I think, is going to depend on how much comes out about Kirk Ferentz and how much he was aware of the situation, what he did to try and repair it, or if he did anything to try and repair it. I think it definitely could pretty much go back to normal if, honestly, the situation I see that happening is if Doyle was fired and it seems like there wasn't any other culpable parties at Iowa. But so I could definitely see it returning to relative normalcy as far as much as you can.
Let's not ignore the fact that Chris Doyle is largely considered by a lot of people to be the most important guy on this staff behind Kirk. I mean, he's the highest paid strength coach in the country. So you fire him, you know, that's a big, big hit as far as football goes.
I guess.
I mean, am I wrong on this, guys? I mean, Coach Doyle has been known to be a total game changer for Iowa over Kirk Ferentz's entire tenure.
Well, and Iowa's entire game is basically built on out-strengthening the competition, right? They just push the other team around. They try to exert physical dominance through the run game and through a physical tackling defense. That's their style. So if you don't have the strength coach to get in that training to get these players to be as strong and as dominant as possible in that aspect, it's going to have to change the style of your football as well. On top of not having the same kind of, you know, conditioning for these players as well. And the linemen will suffer, the legendary offensive linemen and the stuff that they've been able to do and the high draft picks that they've had coming out of Iowa on the offensive and defensive side. You know, they're going to suffer a lot because strength is so important down there. If you don't get a quality replacement anyway.
I think it's going to be a news-filled couple of weeks ahead. That's for sure. Let's go around the panel. We're going to do something a little different this time. Let's just kind of start with Noah. Go around the panel. Give me your final take on the weekend that was, and, you know, maybe in just a few sentences, your outlook based on what we've learned and what we think has to happen. Noah, we'll start with you.
Based on what we've heard, it's a very difficult time for the Iowa football program. And it's inexcusable what some of these players have gone through. But at this point, honestly, the best thing that can happen is, and this goes back to what Amari said earlier about respecting people. If respect can be a key part on both sides between players and coaches, it will make huge strides in this issue for this team and in any other team that is facing these kinds of allegations or these kinds of problems. And so having that respect would be, to me at least, the key to fixing these kinds of issues.
Okay.
This is something that is very serious, and it cannot just be brushed over. It honestly feels a little odd for me to talk about it, I'll say, due to my position and unfamiliarity with some of the subject matter. Like I've reiterated so many times, I've just never been put in that kind of position. But change has to take place. Does that mean that you fire Doyle and get a replacement? Is it time to clean house and remove several pieces of the coaching staff? Do you go with a whole new head coach? What are the players going to do? Old players, the players that are currently on the team, players that are considering coming to Iowa on scholarship? I don't know. That's up to the university to decide. I am obviously too distant from the situation to make a judgment call, but it's just something that's very serious and needs to be dealt with. And you just have to trust that somebody who's in charge, somebody who has, you know, their job is on the line, or they understand how serious this is, hopefully, we'll make the correct decision. And you just have to, at a certain point, you just have to trust the people who are in charge to make that call. So, we're just going to have to wait and see.
Alex?
What was the question again?
It's the same question.
What's your, where do you, what was the question? where do you walk away from? What do you walk away from all of this? I mean, what's your overall takeaway from the weekend and moving forward?
Well, I mean, to me, I think it's kind of sad that it takes a national firestorm of incidents like we've seen as far as the protests and everything to make players comfortable coming out and saying this type of stuff. To be honest, and you probably won't like this, but I wasn't terribly surprised hearing about this. It just seems like, from what I can tell from the Iowa program, it just seems like that's the type of environment that might be able to keep this type of thing under wraps until there's an overwhelming, lot of people that are coming out, and it makes people feel more comfortable. It didn't surprise me that much. I think they're definitely going to have to make a drastic change. I don't see them being able to, especially with Doyle, I don't see them being able to have him, even if he apologizes for, I can't imagine what he's going to say, but let's say he says that, the players took things the wrong way, but if he was insensitive, that he apologizes for that. I don't see that being enough in this situation, in the current climate of things. So I think they're going to probably have to take pretty drastic action. I don't see it being great for Iowa if they don't. And the next couple weeks are going to be really telling as far as what comes out about Doyle and other people. So it's just, my overall feeling is this type of thing is probably more common than most people think. And then it takes a more, widespread awareness for it to come to light. So it's definitely difficult times. Nothing's been easy for a few months for anyone, it seems like. So
I would say what I take away from this weekend, this had to happen. As you said, Alex, you wish it wouldn't have taken a firestorm, but this had to happen. I think all of us would agree if this came out after Kirk Ferentz retired, it would forever tarnish his legacy. But he has the opportunity as the dean of college football to prove why he's the dean of college football. He has an opportunity to prove why the stability of the Iowa program has been what it has been for 21 plus years. And he has the privilege of making a change at a largely white university for people of color and minorities in general. It's not going to be perfect. We know that. It's a world we live in. But I think we all agree that Kirk Ferentz, we have trust that he can, and I have trust that he will make the appropriate changes. He will take the measures necessary to whatever that means, whatever that means, he will take the proper measures in order to reestablish the reputation and the confidence all of us have in the University of Iowa football program. We don't know how many recruits are going to start decommitting. I think there will be some. I just think you're going to have some of that. We don't know how many, but I think that will be telling, because if these recruits and their conversations with Ferentz over the coming days and weeks are positive and reassuring and genuine, I think from a football standpoint, this can be overcome. And I believe, and I think I think this is something that we can all have confidence in. I believe that Kirk Ferentz will not only make it right from a football standpoint, but he will make it right on an individual person, an individual standpoint with each individual player who's been to this program and been affected by feelings of injustice, whether they be racially based or not. So time for change, and I'm glad it happened now and not 2-3 years from now. So with that being said, I really want to thank Amari Spivey again for coming on the show. We hope to talk to him again. As I said to him after the show, hopefully we get to talk during football season and actually talk some football, because it's been a while since we've been able to talk really anything sports related. Everything's just been a difficult few months. So again, we thank Amari for coming on. We wish him and his family the best during this difficult time. We thank Micaiah Noah Kruko for being on the show as well. Alex, thank you for joining us and talking about a very difficult subject. We'll be back everybody next, well, not next week, but our next podcast will probably be talking about something else. And so
I sure hope so.
Well, I hope it's not another firestorm like we've been dealing with, but we will be back in the coming month and we will talk more Hawkeye sports. Anything else to add from anybody on the panel today? All right. I think that sums it up. And we hit the 2-hour mark, so you can thank yourselves for that, Micaiah, Noah, and Alex, even though I probably talked more than half of the show. So, no, I think it was a good time to have a longer show, given the circumstances. So we'll see everybody back next time. This has been week 119. This is Brada's Branded Thoughts.